Good evening, everybody. I'm still Chris, and I am still an alcoholic. I have had a lot of fun this weekend. I really have enjoyed myself. What a great crowd, you know. No one has come up and insulted me or thrown anything at me or you know let the airs out of my tires. It's early yet. Steps 10, 11, and 12. Steps 10, 11, and 12 are good steps. I see step 10 as a reactive step. I've been exposed to some tools in recovery that work better than mine. You know, that was a big surprise to me. One of my first experiences was I went to my sponsor and I said, I'm gonna kill my boss and I'm gonna blow up his truck and I'm gonna ruin his business. And he said to me, what? And I said, yeah, he like insulted me in front of the boys. And I was gonna sneak in there at night and blow up his trucks because he had made me feel small. And my sponsor goes to me, no, Chris, here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna go in tomorrow to work. You're gonna say, Anthony, I need to talk to you privately for a minute. And then you're gonna say, I don't appreciate the way you yelled at me in front of my crew yesterday. If you ever have any problems with me, could you please pull me aside and just talk to me about it. And he's explaining this to me, and I'm thinking, what? The blowing up the truck thing sounds better than that, you know? I don't want to do that. But the problem was he had a series of being right that was unbroken, and so, all right, I'll give it a try. I go, I ask the guy to, and I say that exact thing to him, and he goes, okay, and he never yelled at me again. I'm like, where'd this guy come from? This doesn't make any sense to me. Don't you have to blow things up? I mean, I had broken tools in my learn how to live in this world box. And there's a lot of great wisdom teaching that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't go to a discussion meeting without hearing some really wise stuff, just really good wisdom teachings. And those are very, very fine things to hear. You're going to hear people with experience in a lot of different areas. And if they're not sharing their opinion, they're actually sharing their experience. You can really pick up some good things. But the fact of the matter is the things that really worked for me basically came out of this book, the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I learned how to write inventory, as I learned how to be really honest and share with people really what's going on, the real Chris, not the persona I need to put up there in front of you to make you think I'm okay, but the real Chris. And as I learned to access the power of God or the power of spirituality where my character defects were concerned or where the wrongs that I had caused were concerned, how to take care of those wrongs, as I started to use these tools and I started to learn how to apply them in my life, things really started to get good with me. And things started to get good in my life. step 10 is a reactive step. I think it's all the other 11 steps all in one step for applying this now. How do you live in the now? You use the 10th step. How do you move through the day when you're confused or when you've made a mistake or when you're frightened or when you're mad? What do you do? How do you apply the recovery process so that you can move through life without causing a lot of turbulence? The alcoholic is the most turbulent individual in the world, and everything is about them. Everything is like in direct confrontation to them. And that's certainly the way I was. I would cause problems practically everywhere I would go, and everything would be about me. And my family and friends, learned how not to involve me in anything because I would turn it into something about me, like somebody would die. And I'd think that son of a bitch, died on me. You know, died on me. Now this is going to be inconvenient. You know, I'm going to have to suit up, and I hate wearing a suit, and I'm going to have to go to a church. I hate going to a church, you know, bastard. Died on me. I mean, so I'll make a funeral about me. You know, and that's just one little slice of what I was like. So as I start to use these tools, I didn't start to use them out of any sense of virtue. I didn't start using them to be a great person or anything. I started to use them because my way was I was shooting myself in the foot every single chance I got. I was doing it wrong. And when I was doing it wrong, it was causing me emotional pain, and it was causing problems in the relationships that I was in. So as kind of a beginning of setting up a new default setting, I would start to grab these tools, grab these spiritual principles, and start to apply them. And a lot of times I knew they weren't going to work. And I knew they were stupid, and I didn't understand them. But when you start to apply these principles, they start to work. They just do. They're good principles. I just outthought them. And I just didn't think they would work for me because I was so special. But they started to work. And after a period of time, you start to trust these principles. You know, I'll give you a brief example of how I applied step 10. About 3 or 4 years ago, I was running a facilities district for a school system. And there's all kinds of politics, and you got 7 different bosses. You got the principals that want this. You got your own boss, and then you have the superintendent, and then you have the BA, the business administrator, who doesn't want you to spend money. And it's this complicated thing. It's really hard to do this dance and keep everybody happy. And the principal came up to me and told me I needed to do something. And I remember thinking, you know, if I do that, it's going to cause me all kinds of trouble with other people. I know what I'll do. I'll do this. And I'll just, like, you know, pretend I didn't hear him or something. And what happened was it bothered me. It bothered me that I wasn't absolutely direct with this individual. One of the things that you learn in the step process is to say what you're going to do and then do what you say you're going to do. The worst breakers of these principles are alcoholics. We never tell you what we're going to do, and if we tell you we're going to do something, we do something else. And that leads to people to not trust you, and it causes animosity, and all of a sudden you've got all these personality defects or personality issues going on. But when you actually tell somebody what you're going to do and then actually do that, they start to trust you, and you start to have less problems in your life. So what I did was, really, I did an end around this principle because I didn't want to hear it from, like, 3 other people. But it really bothered me, and I had to go to them. And as it started to bother me, I recognized the fact that I need to make amends promptly. And the reason for that is resentments and fears and guilt and remorse and all that stuff is corrosive of the spiritual condition. What you really need to do is you need to address those things quickly so that you don't suffer, so that your spirit doesn't start to become contaminated with these things. And, you know, through many, many years of application, I've come to the point where I can do some of this stuff pretty well. Don't think because I'm up here I'm some expert, because every single day I fall short in word, thought, and deed. But I've gained some experience, and when I apply these things, my life is better for it, and the people around me's life is better for it. You know, the continuing to take inventory. I've written so much inventory that I can pretty much see which areas of self are being affected. I can see the false self being attacked, you know, in certain situations, like when I think somebody's insulting me, or I think somebody's judging me, or I think somebody's, you know, I'm under attack in one direction or another. I can see those things now a lot better than I used to, and I can see them as illusions. I'm not under attack. I've got nothing to defend. And understanding that, I can move through the world without being bothered emotionally by all kinds of stuff like I used to be. These are the tools that allow me, with God's help, allow me to be safe and protected from the next drink and get on about the restructuring of my life. Step 11, I absolutely love step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. Praying only for his will, etc., etc. Seeking through prayer and meditation. I believe very, very deeply today in God. Most of my belief has come through direct experience and the experience of others. Amazing, amazing things happen every day in my life. And I don't chalk them up to chaos theory, and I don't chalk them up to bizarre coincidence. I chalk them up to a divine synchronicity about the world and the spiritual world. I'll give you just one little example that happened to me today. And if you were to do a statistical study on this, you'd find that it would be a million to one that this would have happened. I was talking to the pastor of this church, got a chance to do a little sidebar and thank him for being hosting us here. And talked about music. He's got guitars all in his office. So I go, yeah, I like guitar. I've studied guitar for many years, and I collect guitar music. I love music. And he goes, oh, you can make me a CD. Make me a CD. And I go, hold on a minute, because I've got CDs in my bag, you know, just to give out, because that's what I do. Anybody that really knows me knows that I'm nuts about music. And as I'm pulling a CD out of the bag, he goes, do you know Phil Kagi? Guess which CD I had in my hand I was going to give him? A Phil Kagi CD. How many people in here even know who Phil Kagi is? Two people. Okay. Phenomenal Christian guitarist. Now, if you were to do a statistical study on how many musicians and how many CDs there are out there, you would know that this is like a million to one that I would be pulling out this disc. But it didn't blow me away because I'm used to these type of coincidences. It's a synergistic synchronicity of the spiritual world, and things fall into place in marvelous ways. One of the things that I recognized early on, I talked the other day about crying out to a God that I hadn't even been talking to since I was 11 or 12. One of the things that I recognize is it's through, everything is through the grace of God in my understanding and my experience. I can't even go to meetings without the grace of God. I can't take a breath of air without the grace of God. And I think it would be pretty arrogant of me to walk around AA saying, well, this is how I do it. You know, this is how I stay sober. How do you do it, Chris? I just keep it simple. I don't take the first drink. I think that's a very, very deep arrogance to say something like that, because I was hopeless and I was powerless. I tried separating from alcohol on my own 1,000 times. I knew from age 16 I had a drinking problem and it was a bad idea for me to drink. I knew that I couldn't separate. I could never make the decision followed by the commitment that would allow me to stay separated from alcohol. I was in desperate trouble. I reach out to God and then become willing to do some certain things, and all of a sudden the obsession is removed. You know, I know that comes from a divinity, that comes from a spirituality that's very, very deep, and I can't even pretend that I understand it. But I know through experience that God works in my life. How do I access that God consciousness that they talk about in our big book. I need to access it with the disciplines of recovery, the disciplines of the steps, the disciplines of the spiritual principles. If I become disciplined, spirituality ends up being the result, and marvelous events happen in my life. My first experience with prayer in sobriety was I had a really bad week. I'm sober maybe 6 months. I had a really bad week. And I end up going over to my sponsor's house. I mean, I was desperate. It was one of those periods of time where, you know, I don't know that I can make it through this. This is too emotionally painful. And I remember knocking on his door, and I never just showed up at his house. You know, this was a first. And he came to the door, and I couldn't even talk. I was so emotionally distraught. He goes, "Chris?" And I go, like this, right? And he brings me inside, and he sits me down. He doesn't even want to know what the drama du jour is. You know what I mean? He doesn't need to know. Your sponsor doesn't need to know what kind of drama you're going through, okay? You're going through drama. There's an answer to that. And he sat me down at the kitchen table, and he said, "Chris, do you pray?" I'm thinking, you know, what does that have to do with anything? What does that have to do with what's going on? You know, I'm about to lose my job. This is going on, that's going on. I don't, you know, money, you know, women, all this stuff is going on. And he goes, do you pray? And I'm like, well, he goes, it's a yes or no question. Okay. You know, if you don't answer it with a yes or a no, that's a no. So I go, well, and he goes, well, here's what I want you to do. Here's what I want you to do. Every single morning when you get up, I want you to hit your knees and ask God for the strength and direction to get through the day. And then at night, I want you to just thank him for the day. That's simple, just easy. Just get on your knees and do that. And because he had an unbroken record of being right, you know, this is my sponsor, you know, much to my chagrin, I started to do that, and this is about 6 months sober, so I'm starting to hit my knees. And you know, I pray in the morning and I pray at night on a regular basis. I don't feel right if I haven't gone through my prayer ritual, and I do it alone. And I don't feel right if I haven't done it. It's almost like if I haven't prayed and I leave the house, it's almost as uncomfortable as like not wearing my pants out, you know, outside. I mean, I need to stop what I'm doing when I recognize the fact that I haven't prayed and I need to pray. Now, meditation, I've done a number of different kinds of meditation. I love the people who are really spiritually fit with meditation. Lena and Bill are going on a 6-day silent meditation retreat. I'm like, "You don't talk?" She goes, "It's a silent retreat." I go, "Well, you don't talk?" No. So, I mean, I love people that are incredibly disciplined with this. I don't pretend to be that disciplined, but I do pretend admit to being very, very interested in and devoted to meditative practices. I've done a number of them. I've done, you know, sitting meditation. I'm a big fan of contemplative prayer, which is a Christian form of contemplation. You know, when they talk in the big book about meditation, Bill really didn't know a whole lot about meditation. He knew you needed to do it, but he didn't know a whole lot about meditation. He certainly wasn't an expert when the book was written. And he talks about a lot of things that are really contemplative more than they are like the Eastern forms of meditation that we're kind of used to today. But I've done various types of meditation. I used to be a runner. I used to run marathons for about 7 or 8 years. And during that period of time, there's a lot of time on the road. You know, when you're in an aerobic state, and that was meditative for me. I could concentrate on one thing and get very, very deeply involved in that specific thought without having my mind wander all over the place. And I think it was because, you know, the endorphins were up, the blood was flowing. And for one reason or another, I could really concentrate on one spiritual thing. Much of my recovery philosophy was developed out on the road running. I've done musical meditation, which I don't think I invented, but not a lot of other people do it. It has to be the right kind of music. And what I'll do is I'll listen to really ambient music, real melodic and acoustic instrumental music. And I'll put on the headphones and I'll lie down and I'll fall into the music. And that's a good way for me to do it. One of the ways, though, that I'm devotional is I do a lot of spiritual reading. I mean, way too much spiritual reading. I haven't been able to read fiction for 15, 20 years. I haven't been able to do it. If you look at the books I have, they're all books about God and spirituality and Christianity and Buddhism and you know, they're all comparative religious studies or deep devotional studies. There's like two basic areas that I'll read. I'll read the critical historical stuff, which is, you know, about the nuts and bolts of that particular faith system. And then I'll read the devotional stuff, which is the stuff that's more spiritual, that talks about, you know, actually applying these techniques spiritually. And, you know, over the course of time, I've had libraries with just, you know, boxcar loads of books. And I find great comfort in seeking that spiritual wisdom that so many people before us have gained. They've gained access to the spiritual world and they come back and they write books about it and they talk about how important it is. And I like exploring those books and always have. So spirituality is a very, very deeply cherished part of my life. And I think step 11, because it's broad, roomy, and all-inclusive, I think we can kind of find our way through that and we can see what works for us and what doesn't work for us. And we can try to go to churches, or if that's not for us, then, you know, we can try to go to some Zen studies, or, you know, or we can find on our own a path toward that spiritual realm where healing, where deep healing takes place for us. I believe that our spirit is shot out by the time we walk in to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's many, many years ahead of us where we need to try to heal and develop that spirit and try to seek some kind of knowledge of the power that's keeping us safe and protected from booze and allowing us to operate on this planet. It's important for us. You know, non-alcoholics can jump into spirituality or they cannot. The problem is the alcoholic without a spiritual practice or processes will die. We're not the type of people who can do without this. We can't remain cranky day after day, year after year. We just can't. So what I would say to you is find out what works for you. Find out what you're drawn to. Try a number of things. If you get a lot of comfort, you know, spiritual comfort from something, then move toward that. Grow in understanding and effectiveness. Get involved with that spiritual world because it's all important. It really is. It's all important. One book I was reading, it's a new book, and it's called God According to God. And it's just the kind of thing that I pick up at a bookstore and I start to read. Now, this guy is a theoretical physicist and a cosmologist. In other words, you know, he's somebody that studies the creation of the universe. And he's getting involved in these really deep concepts. And I'll share a couple of them with you to just show how crazy I am with the stuff that I read. In the beginning of the universe, almost all scientists now believe that there was what was called the Big Bang. And what that was is that was all matter compressed to the size of a golf ball in the entire universe. And it exploded and it turned into ultraviolet radiation and the cloud expanded. And what it was a cloud of hydrogen and helium atoms. And it expanded out into the universe. And these hydrogen and helium atoms would, because of gravitational pull, would form suns. And that's basically what the fires are on the stars. It's like hydrogen and helium, combining. Now, that's really all there was hydrogen and helium. But what happens is when a sun burns out, it collapses in on itself and it turns into a supernova, which is it all just collapses in and then it explodes. Well, in that collapsing and explosion is what has formed all of the elements, like gold and silver and all 96. Remember the periodic tables in science class? All of those substances were really formed in the universe by collapsing suns. So if you think about this, we're made up of different things than hydrogen and helium. We're made up of different substances. We're made up of pieces of exploding suns. You know, and I'll start reading this stuff and I'll start to see that there's an unbelievable divine process at work in the universe today. How remarkable it is that we're right here, right now, tonight, all of us just existing here on this planet. You know what the chances are of a habitable planet in the universe is? It's like 10 to the 400th power, you know, if you really look into it. It's impossible that this could have happened by chance. And these cosmologists and these physicists are getting to the point where they don't believe in matter just creating out of nothing. They're starting to believe that this all had to be part of an idea. The universe had to be created from an idea. And this is like the last book that I read. Now, I tend to believe that. I tend to believe that there's something at work in our lives. I absolutely believe that because I've seen just too much in my lifetime to believe that we're just all here by accident, wandering around trying to make the best of a weird situation. I really think that there's something going on. And I think that this spiritual power, the power of God, I think it's accessible by us. And we need to rightly relate ourselves to that power through these spiritual disciplines, to access the absolute power of God. This is, you know, AA is not a self-help program. They put the books in the wrong section when you find the AA stuff in the self-help section. This is a divine help section. This isn't about helping yourself. You read the big book. The big book's about helping other people. And through that process, you can become healed and you can become, you can access the spiritual realm and your life can be recreated in amazing ways. Now, if you've gone from step one through step 11 diligently, painstakingly, they talk about in the book, if you've done this with an experienced sponsor or spiritual advisor and you haven't skipped over a bunch of stuff because it was inconvenient, there's something going on with you at the end of the 11th step. You know a new freedom and a new happiness. Your perspective on life has changed. You don't act the way you used to act. You don't think the way you used to think. You are reborn, they talk about, reborn. And I've seen this happen time and again with the people that I work with, and it certainly happened with me. The next step, it's almost incumbent upon us to give this away. You can't go through a spiritual awakening and then say, guys, thanks. I'll see you. It's not something that can happen. It's too great of a gift. And it's the type of gift that you need to give away to be able to keep it. So this leads us to step 12. Nothing so much ensures our immunity from alcoholism as intensive work with other alcoholics. You know what intensive work with other alcoholics isn't? Here's my phone number. Give me a call if you get into trouble or you feel like drinking. That is not intensive work with alcoholics. You know what else isn't intensive work with alcoholics? Oh, you're drinking, let me give you a ride to the rehab. That's not intensive work with other alcoholics. You know what else is not intensive work with alcoholics? Showing up at the meeting and shaking everybody's hand, having a cup of coffee and discussing the big problems of the day in the closed-minded discussion meeting. That is not intensive work with alcoholics. Their intensive work with alcoholics is spelled out very specifically in the chapter Working with Others. Now, I was doing what I thought were a lot of 12-step things when I was in early sobriety. Somebody would call me up and I'd take them off to Happy Hills and I'd be like, yeah, it was a great 12-step call, yeah. No, it wasn't. It was a taxi ride. The 12-step call starts when he gets out of the facility and you get him over to your house and you start to take him through the steps. That's the 12-step work, not driving him to the hospital. You get a limo service to do that. Early on, how do you know what you don't know? And I really thought that I was being of help and I was probably doing the best I can. But I didn't have anything to give away. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message, the message of the spiritual awakening and the steps, to other alcoholics. That's what the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is. Spiritual awakening steps. I don't know what else it could possibly be. All right, how am I supposed to give away an experience I haven't had? If I haven't gone through the steps, how do I carry the message of the experience of the steps to an alcoholic? Now, there's a lot of 12-step work that you can do. You can carry the drunk to the message in a number of different ways. And they're all valid, they're all vital, and we should all do them when they're appropriate and available. You know, making coffee, a lot of other stuff. But then there's carrying the message to the alcoholic, which is a completely different thing. That's the intensive work with alcoholics that they're talking about in the book. That's intensive work. You're sitting with them, you're helping them with the fourth step, you're listening to the fifth step, you're guiding them through amends. Sometimes you have to teach them the rudimentary practices of prayer and meditation. And then you have to kick them out of the nest and get them to start taking other people through the steps. That's the intensive work with alcoholics. Now, there's been times when people have taken exception to my view of that. And I'd like to share one instance of this. This is the 1998 New Jersey Convention or something. I'm asked to speak in the Alcathon. Bill was there. He'll remember this. Anyway, I was tasked with speaking on the 12th step. And you got 20 minutes to share your experience on the 12th step, and then you open it up to the group. Now, okay, I don't know any other way to do this. If there's another way to do it, please tell me. But what I did was I shared for 10 minutes on my experience from step 1 through 11, having had the spiritual awakening. And then I shared for 10 minutes on how I actually take other people through the steps so that they can get their own spiritual awakening. And there was an individual in there that took exception to this. And I can see why. He had five or six sponsees that he's probably never worked step one with. They'd follow him around like they were ducks, you know? Like you could see him like walking behind the guy. And I probably made him feel small by sharing this because it was not his experience. He didn't do it that way. So his ego probably threw up a big defense screen. And what happened was he raised his hand and he started to share. And he wasn't real polite about it. He basically shared like this. Yo, kid, I gotta tell you something. You sound like some goddamn counselor. I never heard such crap in my life. I gotta tell you, let me tell you what, all these steps and all this and a book and all this stuff. Let me tell you what we do. We grab them and we throw them in a car and we take them to a meeting and we love them until they can love themselves. I don't know about all this step crap, I could have taken that, you know, I would have been all right with that. But he insulted my wife, who had shared before him, in the same way. So, being chivalrous, no defects of character. I was up there, and when he got done, I said, Sidney, or whatever the hell his name was, you know, I really appreciate you sharing your opinion on Alcoholics Anonymous. It's always fun to hear opinions like that. And, you know, I will point out, though, that there's a chapter in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous called Working with Others. And in that text, there's probably more instructions in the 12th step than there is in the whole previous 11 steps on you know, what you should do and how you should do it. And it's funny. I don't remember anything in that chapter about throwing somebody in a car or loving them till they can love themselves. And he freaked. Started kicking chairs over. He went absolutely out of his mind. I mean, I've never seen this before, or I've never seen it after they stopped the meeting. I mean, people were blowing for the exits. It was like, meeting over, you know, and it was done. Alcathon over. You know, what are you going to do? I mean, there's two things that you can share in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can share an opinion, or you can share your experience. If you've had an experience with the 12 steps, you can share that experience. All right, let's say you've got a really bad plumbing leak in your house. Just the water's pouring through the wall. It's a nightmare. It's an emergency. And one of your sons is in Votech school and is in his fourth year of plumbing apprenticeship. He's been going to school all day and all night long, learning plumbing theory and codes and all this stuff. But your other son is actually somebody who goes out and actually fixes plumbing repairs. I mean, he actually does it himself. And he's got a truck and he's got the tools and he knows how to do it. He's got experience doing it. The other person has learned intellectually about the theories of plumbing, and the one person has put them into practical application in their lives. Which one of those sons are you going to call when the water's coming out of your wall? You're going to call the one with experience. We need to do the same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. We need to know if you're new or you're just coming back, it is absolutely fair to go up to somebody and say, I'm looking for a sponsor, you know, I'm looking for a qualified sponsor. You know, have you gone through the 12 steps? Do you have experience with the 12 steps? Again, if it's any word that comes out of their mouth except yes, it means no. Okay. Well, you know, I've been reading the book and going to a lot of meetings. That means no. Okay. If they say yes, that means yes. It's life and death. It's life and death here for us. Get somebody with experience with these steps. Practicing the principles in all your affairs. You know, this is an area, especially for me, that's been very, very difficult. I've got these default settings that are based in selfishness and self-centeredness. They're default settings, and I swing to them every once in a while. Rich gave a great example. You know, bypassing the 15 year mention of 15 years with you know, oh yeah, 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 you know. I mean, I've got those default settings too. And it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of work to be able to get past those selfish and self-centered default settings and start to operate on the spiritual path. Sometimes you have to have courage, you know. Sometimes you just really, you have to have courage and just, you know, face the unknown and put the trust in God's hands. I believe God will keep us safe and protected. There's a lot of material in the chapters to wives, to employers, the family afterward, and a vision for you. There's wonderful information in these chapters. There's a lot of spiritual principles that as we grow in understanding and effectiveness, we can start to apply in our lives. Each of these, the miracle, I think, of the big book is each of them are so profound. How did these guys know? you know, that so many of these demonstrations and exercises were that powerful. And when I apply them, I'm not going to say that I apply all these things all the time. I've got default settings. But when I apply these spiritual principles, I get spiritual results. The craziest thing I see in Alcoholics Anonymous is somebody who's about to do their 50th amend, and the 49 before were all wonderful experiences, and they'll be standing in front of the 50th going, ain't gonna work this time. I know this time I'm going, you know, I'm gonna go to jail, or they're gonna hit me. Or, I mean, we have this pre-programmed belief that it's gonna be just horrible if we actually apply this spiritual principle. It's the craziest thing I've seen, because the spiritual life is not a theory. We need to live it. For so long, I believed because I had theoretical spiritual knowledge, I was spiritual. And again, if we've said anything here this weekend, it's not about what you think, it's about what you do. It's about your behavior. So practicing the principles can be very difficult. One of the biggest criticisms of Alcoholics Anonymous today from experienced alcoholics is, what happened to the 12-step call? Why aren't we doing the 12-step call? When you read the chapter, Working with Others, this is what they were doing. On Monday night, they all got together and talked about the week. On Tuesday night, some of them went to the mental hospital. Some of them went down to the Bowery. They tried to find drunks. Okay, Wednesday night, you know, they went to the hospitals, or they went to the food kitchens and they tried to find alcoholic prospects. On Thursday, they looked for more alcoholic prospects. Finally, by around Friday, some of them have gotten some of them. And they got them into Towns Hospital, or they got them into the hospital in Akron. And then they've got some prospects in the hospital, some proteges. And now they start shooting people in there to tell their story, to try to identify, to allow these people to identify that, yes, these are people who are alcoholic like they are, and they have a solution. And they're trying to hook them. They're basically trying to hook them and then get them into the steps. That's what it was like in the early days. We sit around in meetings today. You know, meeting after meeting after meeting after service commitment after this, after that, you know, go here and do this, do that. There's alcoholics dying everywhere. You know, they were not going to accept that in the early days. And they had the vital, wet, drunk 12-step call. What's happened to that? And this is something that really Alcoholics Anonymous is going to need to be dealing with pretty soon, because what I believe happened is in 55 or 56, the American Medical Association declared alcoholism a disease. This made it incumbent upon insurance companies to pay for treatment. This made treatment centers pop up everywhere. One bad treatment center after another reared its ugly head. When I got sober, there was 6 treatment centers within walking distance of me. You couldn't shake a stick without hitting Happy Hills. So what happened to our 12-step call? What happened to our 12-step call? We started turning it over because it was easy. It was an easier, softer way. Instead of bringing them over to your house and taking them through the steps, why don't we just drop them off at Happy Hills and be done with them? And people started to get lazy, and they started to not pay attention to the instructions in our book. I would... If you're a sponsor, or you want to sponsor, or you want to work with other people, I would challenge you to become very, very proficient with the instructions in the chapter Working with Others. When I've used these instructions, I have not wasted my time. A lot of people come up to me and want to work with me over the years. It's happened many, many times. And they're not all serious. They're not all about having a spiritual awakening of, you know, from the steps and recovering from alcoholism. They just want to get out of trouble. They just want to stop feeling bad. They, you know, they see the steps or something as an overreaction. It basically says in our book, if somebody's not willing to work with you, you need to drop them. In other words, want you over here Wednesday night? We're going to start going through the steps. Oh, wow, man. I don't know about this. All right. So, you know, if you've got another way, that's great. Here's my phone number. Love to be of help. Don't let the door hit you in the ass. That's what it tells us to do. But what do? We get him in a car and we bring him to a meeting and we love him until they can love themselves. I don't know. I go back to the text Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, if you're going to argue with me about what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, you're not arguing with me. You're in direct conflict with our basic text. And that's okay, too, because the traditions, inherent in the traditions, are you have absolutely the right to be wrong. But the fact of the matter is there's a lot of people dying out there. There's a lot of people dying of alcoholism. There's over 100,000 a year in America die of alcoholism. And yet there's almost 20 million sober people in America. All right? That doesn't make any sense to me. We have the power. We have the people. We have the process. We need to do more. We're not doing enough. We need to do more. So I would challenge everybody to bone up on the chapter Working with Others, and where it's appropriate and where it's available, reach out your hand to help. Don't you remember how much you suffered? If you can ease that kind of suffering in somebody, shouldn't you be about that work? I've really, really enjoyed being here. I want to thank Mark for doing unbelievable amounts of work. Robert John, the same. I absolutely adore the other three speakers, Carrie, Rich, Doug, friends of mine going way back. You all are special people up here. A little fire has been started, a little fellowship of the spirit fire. Keep that fire going, please. That's all I got.